Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Please join me in welcoming the very talented designer and artist, Lisa Lichty. Welcome, Lisa.
Good morning, Sherry.
I'm happy to have you on my show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you became a master jeweler.
Well, actually, even as a child, I mean, my family has always been artistic, and we did a lot of crafts. And I have to say, really, as an adult, my first art was industrial art. But, you know, as a child, we did ceramics, and my mom made, you know, Christmas decorations. She sewed, and so very crafty family, and I always enjoyed doing art. And as a young adult, I began doing industrial art with, I'd take bottles, unique, interesting liquor bottles or bottles that I found that had, you know, products in them. And I would, it was kind of like a decoupaging type. I would put jewels on them and different things. And I first started making them, and I'd put bubble baths in them and give them to friends. It was just more of a hobby. And then I also was making seatbelt belts that were completely recycled out of, like, the rubber of a tire was the belt, and then a seatbelt was the closure. And then I'd rivet caps on, whether it was different pop caps, like Coca-Cola caps, or I had friends that bartended and asked me to make them beer belts out of different beer caps. So that was another of my industrial art, and all recycled type of things is what I was really doing. I made people footstools that were made out of clothing, you know, like a golfer footstool with the golf shoes. A lot of fun projects like that. And
were you an artist in school?
Absolutely. I took art all throughout high school, and that isn't what I went to school for. I went for marketing, but later I went to school at the Holland School of Jewelry to become a master jeweler. So, no, I was actually, you know, in my 30s when I decided to go back to school. I had, you know, worked in marketing. I had owned a restaurant. And I'd always, like I said, I kind of played around with the industrial art, doing shows and everything. And then a friend of mine started giving me real jewelry to sell, like gold and you know, in the pawn shop, and he would get very unusual pieces, and I loved it. And, as you know, I would clean up the jewelry and restore it and started doing that. And then as I started doing that type of thing, I said, you know, I really would like to just know everything about jewelry. So it really made me want to go to school and become a master jeweler, and I've been in it ever since.
Could you explain to the audience exactly what a master jeweler is?
A master jeweler is someone, well, the certification, what we began in was beginning repairs, just very simple, like sizing the jewelry, you know, doing simple solders, repronging, and then more advanced jewelry, which becomes casting, which there's centrifugal casting, there's vacuum casting. And in that, you are doing an investment where you take the wax, or you take, there's organic casting. You take a wax and you carve it to the piece that you want. Say you're making a link bracelet. You would carve it out of wax, and then you would cast the pieces, and or you would make it out of metal. You know, take it, the wire of the metal. That's the great thing about jewelry, is you can take a bar and liquidate it and make it whatever you want. So that was really, I really loved the school because it was hands-on. You actually got to work with the metal. Everybody was on a bench. I learned how to make hinges and lockets and just, you know, becoming a master jeweler. Like I said, that was the beginning, and then the advanced repair class, and then there was a gemology class that taught us all about color grading and colored stones and diamonds and the centrifugal, you know, weight of the jewels. And this is what distinguishes gems, and how to use a refractometer, how to put a gemstone on a refractometer and tell exactly what kind of gem it is. But it was a very, very unique class. And like I said, we actually, you know, got to do all the hands-on repair. We got to do the casting. We had real gemstones that we color graded and diamond graded with. And throughout that, after the, you know, you finish all of the courses, you become a master jeweler. And then there is also the platinum class, which you completely have to forget about how you work in gold and silver when you work in platinum.
When you're designing, does it come from your mind's eye, or does it, or is it something that you see? How do you start your process?
A lot of it is I'll find unique components. Usually, I like to find the gem. Like, you know, I go to the AGTA, the gem show in Las Vegas. Now it's at the Mandalay Bay, but it's literally a huge showroom of gems from all over the world. People from India, Thailand, you know, Sri Lanka, just amazing gemstones. So usually where I start my inspiration is in that area, and I'll find pearls. I'll find my components first that I want to use, whether it be, you know, freshwater pearls or Tahitian pearls. I like to do combinations of gems together. And just more unique jewelry. And then, you know, sometimes the inspiration is from a friend. They just, you know, say, I've always wanted something like this. And when I'll be at the show, I'll find things and then surprise them. Like, I'm making a necklace right now for my friend that owns a chocolate business, and my inspiration is her and her label of her chocolate bar. So I'm actually took and found all the gems that, like Tiger's Eye and Cornelian, and I'm making her a necklace, and then I'm going to do her logo actually on it out of industrial. It's
That sounds
almost
pretty.
Like a pocket watch, yeah. I'm taking the pocket watch apart and making her label in it. So I will have to send you a photo of it when I'm
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
I'll tell you. Do you think that the art of jewelry is the reason you got into it, or was it because of just working with the different metals?
You know what? I enjoy it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing the arts and crafts show. Like I said, I decided after I had tried my hand, I had a restaurant, Tickled Pink Cafe in Panama City Beach. After that, it was such hard work, and I put all my heart and soul into it. And unfortunately, I had a bad lease. And once I started doing really well, the owner wanted it back.
Oh.
So it was kind of like a turning point. Like, I was doing these shows before that, and then when I got the restaurant, I went full into that. But after I got out of it, which anyone that has a restaurant will tell you how much work it is, it was almost like it was a weight lifted off of me. And I said, you know what, I want to do something really unique and done. So I went and I managed another restaurant and went to school, and they would let me have my time off so I could go to the Holland School of Jewelry. And then, you know, again, I just went in and started doing shows, but instead of doing the industrial art, I did jewelry. I would make jewelry. I also like to collect antique and estate jewelry. So I would go and find unique pieces and make jewelry and did shows like the Tennessee Walking Horse shows and seafood festivals and different type of things. So I did that for a couple years, and then I really wanted to work. I figured, you know, that someone would let me work with them and mentor with them. But and when you live in a small town, it's really, you know, the people, they're afraid you're going to come in and work for them and then take their business.
Well, everything's like that today, I think.
Yeah, and it was a small town. It's 60,000 people. So I moved to New York, and the gentleman I was with was an actor and a model. So we both just kind of decided, you know, for us, we should move to New York and, you know, and work in our industry. So I ended up working for a very, very fine manufacturer, Lewis Tamas & Sons in New York. And it was really unique in the fact that they manufactured for Tiffany. I mean, when people buy jewelry, they think, oh, you know, it came from the Tiffany house. But every jewelry store has different jewelers that make pieces for them. But they did the original Gents line for Tiffany and Vedora. They do Harry Winston. So it was just amazing to me to see all of this being done. They make the Schlumberger, the Jean Schlumberger pins, which are Tiffany. The bumpy pins. Yes.
Girl loves Tiffany.
Yeah, they do the Tiffany heart bracelets. They make those. They made the... So it was really unique to me. I was like, oh, my God, here I'm making Tiffany's jewelry. But, you know, it was very unique. I was their assistant. They had a pearl line, too, so I would choose the pearls. I learned all about the enameling, but... it's interesting in manufacturing because in the olden days, you know, a jeweler would do more like I do now. You find one piece, you make the wax, you set it, you polish it, you do one thing. But when you're in manufacturing, it's like one person will be pulling the metal. The next person's like making the knots. The other person's soldering it, you know, and then you send it here and it gets stamped and it's really a team effort, but I like the old pieces that were handmade. So I have to say what I get more excited about is antique and estate jewelry. Yeah. I just have such a huge appreciation.
I just think it's more elegant, and there's just this, I don't know. I inherited pieces from my grandmother, and they're just gorgeous, and you can't really compare.
You can't, and you'll go into these stores, and, you know, most of the pieces are just, you know, mass cast. I mean, there's just no thought into it. It's like the circle with the, you know, it's a circle of diamonds, okay? That's not unique to me. I mean, like
even
the Art Nouveau
diamonds
piece.
Aren't really as exciting as the old pieces. I mean, people don't like the old-fashioned cuts, some of the people, but I like it. I mean, there's character.
I would say, well,
you know,
I work in antique and estate jewelry, so the people that shop with us, sometimes, you know, I have to educate them on, you know, that the piece, you know, is a one of a kind, that one person took and created this and laid out the stones. And, you know, it wasn't, there's not 10 or 20 of them in the world. There's one.
Yeah.
But, I love the whole story about, you know, when the Victorian jewelry, when Queen Victoria was mourning her king, and it became actually, you know, vogue to wear black jewelry. That's when the black onyx and the diamond jewelry came
beautiful.
Into play. It is. That's my favorite. My favorite, the black jewelry with the white, the Masonic ring,
and
all
Victoria
of that.
And her Albert with her cameo.
Yes. Her love of her husband and children reflected romantic and the sentimental outlook. And she did a lot of... flowers and hearts and bows and birds. You can always tell those pieces. Serpent motifs, snakes were also very popular. And they were often used during the Victorian period, and they helped them keep affordable.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see a lot of garnets in that period, and amethyst and coral and turquoise and seed pearls. A lot of times you'll see it, the really fine work of a seed pearl as the bezel. You know, today they would have been diamonds. But
that's why I like watching the Antique Roadshow in England better than the U.S., because when they show jewelry, it's one of a kind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love Art Nouveau, too.
The 1920s.
You know, the Lalique pieces, and it was just amazing. Like, they would do the dragonflies and the snakes and poppies and orchids and irises and water lilies.
And
they were
Symphony taking the jewelry and making it into lamps and stuff. It's all connected to
I was going to say, I appreciate glass work. I love the ceiling at the Bellagio, the Dale Chihuly ceiling. I actually lived in Italy for a couple years, and one of my favorite things was when I would go to Venice, I would take the Aqua Boost over to Murano. And Murano, Italy, is very well known for its glass, but it was amazing, the pieces that they'd make out of glass. I mean, they would do, I have a miniature collection from them. I would get a piece of candy each time I went, that blown glass candy. So I have a lot of pieces of candy from there. But they would make even, I have a little grasshopper that they made. It was just amazing that the blowing of the glass. But, yes, it's the same as gold. You know, when you put the heat to it, you can change it into it. It becomes so malleable. You can change it into different shapes. But, no, glass is very exciting. I've never worked in glass. But I've definitely seen a lot of it blown.
I remember the first time I saw that was with my family. We were at Magic Mountain. It's a park in California.
Oh, yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
And we were walking by, and the man was outside. He was sitting on a chair, and he was blowing. I still have the piece. He was blowing a Pegasus, but I didn't know that's what it was going to be. And I just sat and stared. I could not move. My father was like, okay, let's just wait and see what it's going to be, because Sherry doesn't want to move. And well, it was beautiful. It was like he was doing it for me.
Yes.
And I didn't buy it, so he did, but do it for me.
Yes, I have, yes, a strong appreciation for glass. I would like to take a glass class. I think it would be fun. I like stained glass.
Oh, yeah.
Stained
glass windows
beautiful.
Are amazing, especially the ones in Europe.
Oh, completely. Or New York has a lot of really beautiful Art Deco buildings.
The ones that are, like, at the library. And what's the other? I forgot the
Metropolitan has some beautiful pieces. And they also have some beautiful at the Met, their jewelry collection, they have a lot of hair jewelry, which was also
very
popular. Yes, very popular. It was, a way of love. It was showing their love. We have some pieces in our shop it's a cross. It's circa 1830s, and it's turquoise with an old mine-cut diamond and garnets. And you flip it over, and then the four corners of the cross, it's like a half a moon, and their hair lockets.
Mm-hmm.
And then the center, it had the circuit date. So that's a really unique
That's,
piece.
Again, Victoria's influence.
Yep, that was Victorian.
Yeah, because she started that trend without her
chair. Yeah, she loved her children and her husband. So, yes, she did. She that became a period that they did the hair locket.
Can you tell us a little bit of the history of your own designs, the pieces that you make?
The pieces that I've made, a lot of them, like I said, I like the combination of pearls and gems. Generally what I've made, I've sold it. I do, like I said, I have, you know, right now I'm working on a necklace for a friend. But I've worked on engagement rings, and really I like to, you know, sometimes people just go and they buy an engagement ring. And I think it's really important for, you know, a person to sit down with someone and figure out what you want. I mean, the shape of the stone. And then, you know, some people just like a simplistic. Some people want, you know, it to be something that represents them, whether they like hearts or flowers, or if they want it to look like a crown, or if they want, you know, colored stones. Some people like to put, you know, gemstones, like with their diamonds, or they want to represent their children, like mother's rings. So I think my designs come more from inspiration from my clients. Early on, they came from just what I thought looked unique together. Like I said, I have an old, I think I'm an old soul. I have a real strong likeness for the onyx and pearl. I shot a piece that I sent to you that made, and it was a long satchoir necklace. I like chokers. I like to make chokers. I like to take just like a thick piece of velvet and then, you know, embellish it. Even sometimes I find old brooches and take, and you just, you know, make the thick collar and then put a brooch in the middle of it. But again, I would say that my inspiration is definitely towards the Victorian and Art Nouveau and Edwardian periods. They're just more unique.
I agree with you. I think that's my taste, too. I know that's my taste, too. I prefer the old.
It is. You know, I'm not interested in any of these, you know, when I see things mass-produced, I don't love it.
And they're also kind of brassy and kind of, I don't know.
I
just don't
like
pretty.
Running into the same jewelry as that I have on. I mean, people are always like, when they see my jewelry, like I have a spider ring I like to wear. And right now, one of my favorite pieces is an owl ring. And it's a smoky topaz, but it looks, you know, you can't tell what it is until you're up on it. And then you see the whole smoky topaz is his body. But I have small hands, but I like big rings.
That's
I said the only ring that's too big is the one on another girl's finger. It's not mine. But, no, I like unique style pieces. I don't want anything that's, you know, I know that sells a lot and stuff, but I don't want a Cartier love bracelet. I don't want a heart bracelet from Tiffany. I just don't like the mass-produced pieces.
I found one of the old things that Mr. Tiffany did, I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
Yes, of course. And you know what? We have the unique, we do have pieces that are old brooches that are signed Tiffany. And, you know, they're quite different and more one of a kind. And they did used to do that. But, you know, now they're owned by Avon. So
Yeah. There
you go. It's a new day.
It's kind of sad.
It's a very new day, you know, where you don't have the individual houses. That's why I sometimes have to tell people, you know, okay, you can pay that premium price, but really, if I was going to get engaged, I would go to 48th Street and look at all the estate and antique rings that they have, because that's where they have them. And they have the dealers, and, you know, and you can find a really, really rare, unique piece. And I love the old diamonds. I just think they're so much, you know, the old mine cut. Well, the old mine cut and old European cut, you know, they were cut by hand on a diamond wheel. Today, you know, most of them are just cut, and they're cut by laser. And it's, I mean,
the artistry's gone.
Yeah, I just like all the old Artesian. I just I like the thought of it being just a little old man, you know, sitting there on the wheel, doing each facet, and, you know, somebody sitting there with a piece of gold and rolling it out
and learning it from their father and their father's father and their father's father, and they've always been in the business. I think that's kind of beautiful.
It is, and you know, a lot of people are in jewelry families. I wasn't. My family wasn't in jewelry. I chose to, you know, go to school, and then I've just been fortunate to have this amazing job for 12 years that I've seen, you know, unique Vedura pieces and Tiffany suites and Harry Winston suites and just amazing Bucciolati, Bulgari, Vacheron. They're just all really, really amazing jewelry houses. And I mean, the old necklaces that would have the watches in them.
Yeah.
You just don't see that. And
yeah,
the opera glasses. We don't have as many objects of art as we used to. We used to have a lot of statuaries and a lot of the opera glasses are very cool. And gold purses, they'd make purses out of gold. They'd make them out of silver. Today it would be so expensive to do something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly. You've written a couple articles for my e-magazine, Sherry's Jewel Box. Do you enjoy writing? Is that like something you enjoy?
I do enjoy writing. I write for you. And prior to that, I had been writing for TripAdvisor for a few years and contributing to them. In fact, I think I'm just a badge away from being a top contributor. So I've wrote for them. And, yeah, I do. I enjoy writing. I like to share my knowledge of unique and fun places to go. And then for you, I like to teach people a little bit about the history of jewelry and then the romance of it.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about your articles, because it's really a nice little history lesson, but it's in a gentle way. It's not like a boring history lesson.
No, and when I go to sell a piece, and it's to me, I mean, when you're working with a man and a woman, they are thinking price, 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 price.
Yeah.
And I am thinking heartstrings and what's going to make her happy and, you know, how does it make you feel when you put it on? I think it should be about that. And, you know, I always ask them again, like, what type of shape do you like to see on your hand? You know, when you look down, do you like to see a heart? Do you like to see an emerald cut? Do you want a round? I mean, these are very important things. So if you guys are out there and you're looking for engagement rings, talk to your girlfriend first.
Don't just buy it.
Before you pop the question, yeah, you guys should take a stroll into a jewelry store or two. And it is about the romance. And when I sell the old pieces, I have a gentleman, and I can't imagine the pieces that he has. He's actually in heavy equipment, and he lives in the South. But he buys like 3 or 4 unique brooches from me every time he comes, and they're not easy to find. But when I get the very old brooches, I sold him an owl. It was tiger's eye in his stomach, and then his head was carved out of labradorite. He had Art Deco wings that were all platinum with little diamonds in them. He was way too expensive for Lisa to afford, or else I would have had him. But you know what? I like to find good homes for the jewelry that people really appreciate it, and he does. But he has bought some of the most. He bought an Art Deco turtle from me, and that was all platinum and all the open filigree work, and then all of his shells were amethyst that were French cut.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Lisa,
again,
we don't have very much time left. I'm sorry to interrupt.
I couldn't afford it.
I understand, Lisa, but we don't have very much time left. I just wanted to thank you very much for your interview and to let our audience know that next week we will have Mata Ra and her new book, Blue Lagoon Summer. I'd like my audience to thank Lisa for a wonderful interview. Thank you, Lisa.
You are very welcome, Sherry. I have enjoyed our friendship since we met online, and I'm always happy to help you out with your articles or your blogs.
Thank you very much, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.